I put my arms round her and said, "Ellen, my dear child, I am your mother." She drew back a little and looked at me. Then, with sweet confidence, she laid her cheek against mine, and I folded her to the heart that had been so long desolated. She was the first to speak. Raising her head, she said inquiringly, "You really are my mother?" I told her I really was, that during all the long time she had not seen me, I had loved her most tenderly, and now she was going away, I wanted to see her and talk with her that she might remember me. With a sob in her voice, she said, "I'm glad you've come to see me, but why didn't you ever come before? Benny and I have wanted so much to see you. He remembers you, and sometimes he tells me about you. Why didn't you come home when Dr. Flint went to bring you?" I answered, "I couldn't come before, dear, but now that I am with you, tell me whether you like to go away." "I don't know," said she, crying. "Grandmother says I ought not to cry, that I am going to a good place where I can learn to read and write, and that by and by I can write her a letter. But I shan't have Benny or Grandmother or Uncle Philip or anybody to love me. Can't you go with me? Oh, do go, dear mother." I told her I couldn't go now, but sometime I would come to her, and then she and Benny and I would live together and have happy times. She wanted to run and bring Benny to see me now. I told her he was going to the north before long with Uncle Philip, and then I would come to see him before he went away. I asked if she would like to have me stay all night and sleep with her. "Oh, yes," she replied. Then, turning to her uncle, she said pleadingly, "May I stay? Please, uncle, she is my own mother." He laid his hand on her head and said solemnly, "Ellen, this is the secret you have promised grandmother never to tell." Page 177. "If you ever speak of it to anybody, they will never let you see your grandmother again, and your mother can never come to Brooklyn." "Uncle," she replied, "I will never tell." He told her she might stay with me, and when he had gone, I took her in my arms and told her I was a slave, and that was the reason she must never say she had seen me. I exhorted her to be a good child, to try to please the people where she was going, and that God would raise her up friends. I told her to say her prayers and remember always to pray for her poor mother, and that God would permit us to meet again. She wept, and I did not check her tears. Perhaps she would never again have a chance to pour her tears into a mother's bosom. All night she nestled in my arms, and I had no inclination to slumber. The moments were too precious to lose any of them. Once, when I thought she was asleep, I kissed her forehead softly, and she said, "I am not asleep, dear mother." Before dawn, they came to take me back to my den. I drew aside the window curtain to take a last look of my child. The moonlight shone on her face, and I bent over her as I had done years before that wretched night when I ran away. I hugged her close to my throbbing heart, and tears, too sad for such young eyes to shed, flowed down her cheeks as she gave her last kiss and whispered in my ear, "Mother, I will never tell," and she never did. When I got back to my den, I threw myself on the bed and wept there alone in the darkness. It seemed as if my heart would burst. When the time for Ellen's departure grew nigh, I could hear neighbors and friends saying to her, "Goodbye, Ellen. I hope your poor mother will find you out. Won't you be glad to see her?" She replied, "Yes, ma'am," and they little dreamed of the weighty secret that weighed down her young heart. She was an affectionate child, but naturally very reserved, except with those she loved, and I felt secure that my secret would be safe with her. I heard the gate close after her, with such feelings as only a slave mother can experience. During the day, my meditations were very sad. Sometimes I feared I had been very selfish not to give up all claim to her, and let her go to Illinois to be adopted by Mrs. Sands's sister. Page 178. It was my experience of slavery that decided me against it. I feared that circumstances might arise that would cause her to be sent back. I felt confident that I should go to New York myself, and then I should be able to watch over her and in some degree protect her. Dr. Flint's family knew nothing of the proposed arrangement till after Ellen was gone, and the news displeased them greatly. Mrs. Flint called on Mrs. Sands' sister to inquire into the matter. She expressed her opinion very freely as to the respect Mr. Sands showed for his wife and for his own character in acknowledging those young niggers, and as for sending Ellen away, she pronounced it to be just as much stealing as it would be for him to come and take a piece of furniture out of her parlor. She said her daughter was not of age to sign the bill of sale, and the children were her property, and when she became of age or was married, she could take them wherever she could lay hands on them. Miss Emily Flint, the little girl to whom I had been bequeathed, was now in her 16th year. Her mother considered it all right and honorable for her or her future husband to steal my children, but she did not understand how anybody could hold up their heads in respectable society after they had purchased their own children as Mr. Sands had done. Dr. Flint said very little. Perhaps he thought that Benny would be less likely to be sent away if he kept quiet. One of my letters that fell into his hands was dated from Canada, and he seldom spoke of me now. This state of things enabled me to slip down into the storeroom more frequently, where I could stand upright and move my limbs more freely. Days, weeks, and months passed, and there came no news of Ellen. I sent a letter to Brooklyn, written in my grandmother's name, to inquire whether she had arrived there. Answer was returned that she had not. I wrote to her in Washington, but no notice was taken of it. There was one person there who ought to have had some sympathy with the anxiety of the child's friends at home, but the links of such relations as he had formed with me are easily broken and cast away as rubbish. Page 179. Yet how protectingly and persuasively he once talked to the poor, helpless slave girl, and how entirely I trusted him. But now suspicions darkened my mind. Was my child dead, or had they deceived me and sold her? If the secret memoirs of many members of Congress should be published, curious details would be unfolded. I once saw a letter from a member of Congress to a slave who was the mother of six of his children. He wrote to request that she would send her children away from the great house before his return, as he expected to be accompanied by friends. The woman could not read and was obliged to employ another to read the letter. The existence of the colored children did not trouble this gentleman. It was only the fear that friends might recognize in their features a resemblance to him. At the end of 6 months, a letter came to my grandmother from Brooklyn. It was written by a young lady in the family and announced that Ellen had just arrived. It contained the following message from her. I do try to do just as you told me to, and I pray for you every night and morning. I understood that these words were meant for me, and they were a balsam to my heart. The writer closed her letter by saying, Ellen is a nice little girl, and we shall like to have her with us. My cousin, Mr. Sands, has given her to me to be my little waiting maid. I shall send her to school, and I hope some day she will write to you herself. This letter perplexed and troubled me. Had my child's father merely placed her there till she was old enough to support herself, or had he given her to his cousin as a piece of property? If the last idea was correct, his cousin might return to the South at any time and hold Ellen as a slave. I tried to put away from me the painful thought that such a foul wrong could have been done to us. I said to myself, surely there must be some justice in man. Then I remembered with a sigh how slavery perverted all the natural feelings of the human heart. It gave me a pang to look on my light-hearted boy. He believed himself free, and to have him brought under the yoke of slavery would be more than I could bear. How I longed to have him safely out of the reach of its power. Page 180 is blank. Page 181. Starting chapter 28. Aunt Nancy. I have mentioned my great aunt, who was a slave in Dr. Flint's family, and who had been my refuge during the shameful persecutions I suffered from him. This aunt had been married at 20 years of age, that is, as far as slaves can marry. She had the consent of her master and mistress, and a clergyman performed the ceremony, but it was a mere form without any legal value. Her master or mistress could annul it any day they pleased. She had always slept on the floor in the entry near Mrs. Flint's chamber door, that she might be within call. When she was married, she was told she might have the use of a small room in an outhouse. Her mother and her husband furnished it. He was a seafaring man, and was allowed to sleep there when he was at home. But on the wedding evening, the bride was ordered to her old post on the entry floor. Mrs. Flint at that time had no children, but she was expecting to be a mother, and if she should want a drink of water in the night, what could she do without her slave to bring it? So my aunt was compelled to lie at her door until one midnight she was forced to leave to give premature birth to a child. In a fortnight she was required to resume her place on the entry floor because Mrs. Flint's babe needed her attentions. She kept her station there through summer and winter until she had given premature birth to 6 children, and all the while she was employed as night nurse to Mrs. Flint's children. Finally, toiling all day and being deprived of rest at night completely broke down her constitution, and Dr. Flint declared it was impossible she could ever become the mother of a living child. The fear of losing so valuable a servant by death now induced them to allow her to sleep in her little room in the outhouse, except when there was sickness in the family. page 182. She afterwards had two feeble babes, one of whom died in a few days, and the other in 4 weeks. I well remember her patient sorrow as she held the last dead baby in her arms. "I wish it could have lived," she said. "It is not the will of God that any of my children should live, but I will try to be fit to meet their little spirits in heaven." Aunt Nancy was housekeeper and waiting maid in Dr. Flint's family. Indeed, she was the factotum of the household. Nothing went on well without her. She was my mother's twin sister, and as far as was in her power, she supplied a mother's place to us orphans. I slept with her all the time I lived in my old master's house, and the bond between us was very strong. When my friends tried to discourage me from running away, she always encouraged me. When they thought I had better return and ask my master's pardon, because there was no possibility of escape, she sent me word never to yield. She said if I persevered, I might perhaps gain the freedom of my children, and even if I perished in doing it, that was better than to leave them to groan under the same persecutions that had blighted my own life. After I was shut up in my dark cell, she stole away, whenever she could, to bring me the news and say something cheering. How often did I kneel down to listen to her words of consolation whispered through a crack. "I am old and have not long to live," she used to say, "and I could die happy if I could only see you and the children free. You must pray to God, Linda, as I do for you, that he will lead you out of this darkness." I would beg her not to worry herself on my account, that there was an end of all suffering sooner or later, and that whether I lived in chains or in freedom, I should always remember her as a good friend who had been the comfort of my life. A word from her always strengthened me, and not me only. The whole family relied upon her judgment and were guided by her advice. I had been in my cell 6 years when my grandmother was summoned to the bedside of this, her last remaining daughter. She was very ill, and they said she would die. Grandmother had not entered Dr. Flint's house for several years. They had treated her cruelly, but she thought nothing of that now. Page 183. She was grateful for permission to watch by the deathbed of her child. They had always been devoted to each other, and now they sat looking into each other's eyes, longing to speak of the secret that had weighed so much on the hearts of both. My aunt had been stricken with paralysis. She lived but 2 days, and the last day she was speechless. Before she lost the power of utterance, she told her mother not to grieve if she could not speak to her, that she would try to hold up her hand to let her know that all was well with her. Even the hard-hearted doctor was a little softened when he saw the dying woman try to smile on the aged mother who was kneeling by her side. His eyes moistened for a moment, as he said she had always been a faithful servant, and they should never be able to supply her place. Mrs. Flint took to her bed, quite overcome by the shock. While my grandmother sat alone with the dead, the doctor came in, leading his youngest son, who had always been a great pet with Aunt Nancy, and was much attached to her. "Martha," said he, "Aunt Nancy loved this child, and when he comes where you are, I hope you will be kind to him for her sake." She replied, "Your wife was my foster child, Dr. Flint, the foster sister of my poor Nancy, and you little know me if you think I can feel anything but goodwill for her children." "I wish the past could be forgotten, and that we might never think of it," said he, "and that Linda would come to supply her aunt's place. She would be worth more to us than all the money that could be paid for her. I wish it for your sake also, Martha. Now that Nancy is taken away from you, she would be a great comfort to your old age." He knew he was touching a tender chord. Almost choking with grief, my grandmother replied, "It was not I that drove Linda away. My grandchildren are gone, and of my 9 children only 1 is left. God help me." To me, the death of this kind relative was an inexpressible sorrow. I knew that she had been slowly murdered, and I felt that my troubles had helped to finish the work. After I heard of her illness, I listened constantly to hear what news was brought from the great house, and the thought that I could not go to her made me utterly miserable. Page 184. At last, as Uncle Philip came into the house, I heard someone inquire, "How is she?" And he answered, "She is dead." My little cell seemed whirling around, and I knew nothing more till I opened my eyes and found Uncle Philip bending over me. I had no need to ask any questions. He whispered, "Linda, she died happy." I could not weep. My fixed gaze troubled him. "Don't look so," he said. "Don't add to my poor mother's trouble. Remember how much she has to bear, and that we all ought to do all we can to comfort her." Ah, yes, that blessed old grandmother who for 73 years had borne the pelting storms of a slave mother's life. She did indeed need consolation. Mrs. Flint had rendered her poor foster sister childless, apparently without any compunction, and with cruel selfishness had ruined her health by years of incessant unrequited toil and broken rest. But now she became very sentimental. I suppose she thought it would be a beautiful illustration of the attachment existing between slaveholder and slave if the body of her old worn-out servant was buried at her feet. She sent for the clergyman and asked if he had any objection to burying Aunt Nancy in the doctor's family burial place. No colored person had ever been allowed interment in the white people's burying ground, and the minister knew that all the deceased of our family reposed together in the old graveyard of the slaves. He therefore replied, "I have no objection to complying with your wish, but perhaps Aunt Nancy's mother may have some choice as to where her remains shall be deposited."